Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Time is valuable. That's why Lowe's Blueprint Takeoffs turn blueprints into quotes faster. Bring us your plans, and we'll generate itemized material lists to make quoting easier so you can get back to building. Plus, at the Lowe's Pro Desk, you get access to thousands of building materials not sold in store. And when your order's ready, we'll deliver everything to the job site. Improving is easy at Lowe's.
Bookie Beatdown coming at you. Paul, Cody, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden in New York, New York. You know, we get through all of these Apex cards and we do it for an offering like this where, frankly, top to bottom, there's just an absolute smorgasbord of quality mixed martial arts. So, you know, if you're not interested in this card, you don't like MMA. How are you doing, Code?
Yeah, doing good. Like you said, it's a big pay-per-view event. We're always making the jokes from the last couple of weeks of which guy's going to take the $70,000 to take the dive. And in a card like this, these guys aren't broke asses, except for maybe Eric McConica, which we will get to at some point. Beyond that, you're expecting everyone to give the best of their abilities, and everyone's a well-rounded mixed martial artist. Yes, everyone has flaws to their game. Yes, everyone has X factors, and beyond that, we're gonna break all that down here. But at the same time, it's world-class mixed martial arts, so maybe there's going to be an easier grasp of things. We'll see. 14 fights, tons of them. We just got to get the right ones, Paul.
100%. All right, no rest for the wicked. Let's get right into the action. Main event. We've got Jack Della Maddalena taking on Islam Makhachev for the 170-pound welterweight title of the world. The former lightweight champion Islam Makhachev is a minus 250 favorite. The comeback on Jack, plus 210. I mean, my thoughts on this are pretty quick and easy. I'll just quickly kind of summarize them before throwing it over to you. One, you know, you look at this fight, you think about it. Okay, well, he's moving up. It's just like, well, you look at these stare down pictures. There really isn't that much. Like, it's not a crazy disparity between the two of them. Obviously, Islam's wearing a bit of a puff jacket. You know, maybe he's giving up a little bit of muscle mass because it's going to take some time to put on that weight and everything like that. But he was always the guy who struggled to make 155 pounds. He's strong as an ox. I'm not really worried about the size. You go and you go. And like, Jack Della has made a whole bunch of massive improvements to his takedown defense. But, like, fair be fair. Against Bilal Muhammad, like, Bilal just didn't wrestle until like late in the fight, and then he did have success wrestling later in the fight. Like, it was just a very, very, very weird game plan for Bilal Muhammad. And Islam, frankly, I would expect to be a much better wrestler than what's his name. That was intentional.
I got that one.
Good. And you go to Jack Della quickly, that Basil Fez fight where he's like a minus whatever, 1,500 favorite, who knows, massive favorite. He ends up getting the split decision, gets taken down, controlled a whole bunch during that fight. It was only in 2023, so a little bit over 2 years ago. I know it's, you know, guy moving up, everything like that. Jack Della's looked great. Jack Della deserves a ton of respect for claiming the belt, but you know, Islam is an elite guy. It's, you know, striker versus grappler. Jack Della is 100% live to get a knockout victory here, but the title's coming home to Dagestan on Saturday night. Cody, where are you at with the main event?
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I mean, when you look at a fight from one guy's jumping up a weight class, it's like, what are the differences? And Jack is an inch taller with an inch longer in the reach department. But outside of that, they're roughly the same size. And you got to factor in that a guy like Islam Makhachev from the Russian camps, from Khabib's camp, that he's cutting 25 pounds to make 125 or 155. he's cutting upwards of almost 30 pounds to make the weight. Now it's just a lesser of a weight cut, but naturally, I don't think they're too far off. When I look at this matchup, I'm thinking a lot of the same things you're thinking. Jack Maddalena is the better striker. And if he could keep this fight striking, well, then he's live to pull something off. It's really going to come down to the takedown defense. And it's no knock on Jack is that only a few years ago, someone drew the blueprint on how to beat him, which would be Basil Hafez. And Basil shot 20 takedowns in 15 minutes. Only got three. All three of those came in the first round, but he wins the first. He arguably wins the second based on a lot of cage control time. And in the third, he shoots six takedowns or something. He's constantly pushing that pace. Loses the fight. I thought Jack did win because of the significant strikes, but a lot of people scream robbery on that one. Gilbert Burns, he decides, I'm going to replicate the game plan. He takes Jack Maddalena down seven times on 11 attempts in 14 minutes of fighting. But Gil gasses because he's an older guy with not a deep gas tank. And Basil Hafez gasses because it's his UFC debut and he's not very good.
Short notice too, I believe.
Yeah, he's like taking the fight on a week's notice. It's his UFC debut. And how has he performed since that fight? Not particularly well. Those are the grappling fights that Jack's been in. Jack also squeaked by in a split decision with Kevin Holland in between. So his striking is good, but I don't think it's, you know, far gone conclusion. The best of the division, he's going to knock you out if you stay standing with him. He arguably lost to Kevin Holland in a pure striking affair. And then the guys that have tried to wrestle him, Gilbert Burns and Basil Hafez, were certainly not on the level of an Islam Makhachev. They had a lot of success doing that. The difference is that they tend to tire, whereas Islam doesn't. When you look at maybe a similar type of opponent that Islam's faced recently, it would probably be Dustin Poirier, which he takes down five times on 18 attempts, does not tire. Striking looks good in that fight. Striking's been looking good recently, made a lot of improvements. I think that he doesn't want to keep this fight exclusively on the feet. Of course not. But he's going to be responsible enough to land a few right hands, land a few kicks, close that distance, and then eventually grab a hold of this guy and rip him to the ground. Get on top of him. Establish top control. He's got Khabib sitting in his corner. You think that's not the game plan? Of course it is. And what I want to make a point of, and Paul basically said the same thing here, is that with Basil, he shot 20 takedowns in 15 minutes. Gil shot 11 takedowns in the 14 minutes that the fight lasted, right? Belal should have done the same thing. Belal, meanwhile, shot 9 takedowns over 25 minutes. He didn't come in with a game plan of wrestle. He's tired of guys like Paul and myself and everybody else making those what's-his-name jokes. He wants you to remember the name. And the UFC brass is saying, we don't market this guy because he's boring. And the fans say, we don't watch this guy's interviews or pay attention to him because he's boring. So he comes out with Jack Maddalena, who I think was ranked like number 7 in the division. He wasn't really like the best guy in the division. He was the guy getting the title fight. Mm-hmm. Belal was the assumed favorite. Belal decided to play with his food and strike with them. Still ended up winning 2 of the 5 rounds. But just didn't stick to father's plan, which is get on those hips and take this man down. Islam will do that. And I think that's going to prevail at the end of the night. So I got a lot of respect for Jack Maddalena, and this is going to be a good fight. But wrestling, especially this style of wrestling, and a guy that doesn't get away from the game plan. He sticks to it. And what is it? The exact game plan required to beat Jack Della. So ride this man like a miniature pony for 25 minutes, pick up a decision, or finish him late if the opportunity opens up.
Co-main event, we've got women's super fight. Valentina Shevchenko, the flyweight champion of the world, taking on Zhang Weili. Val, the current slight favorite at minus 128. The comeback on Zhang Weili, plus 108. Who you got here?
Got to go with Valentina Shevchenko. This is one where I think that size is going to matter a little bit here. With Valentina Shevchenko, she checks off all the boxes, right? We know she's an elite-level kickboxer. She's an elite-level wrestler. She's an elite-level grappler. She's got tons of back class. She used to fight at 135 pounds, where she had one heck of a fight in the rematch with Amanda Nunes and gave her everything she could handle. So we know that the class that she's operating with. Why there was a perception of maybe she was a little too old, maybe she was washed, is this Alexa Grasso trilogy. But really, when you break down that trilogy, it's a spot of just bad moments. The first fight against Alexa Grasso, she wins the first 3 rounds, and then the fourth makes one lapse in judgment, gets caught in a rear naked choke, taps out. The second fight against Alexa Grasso, she wins 3 of the 5 rounds, but one of them was considered a 10-8 on 2 of the judges' scorecards because of a knockdown, so she settles with a draw. The third fight with Alexa Grasso, she 50-45'd her across the board. She can grapple, she can wrestle, she can strike. That last fight with Manon Fiorot, she showed that she could do a little bit of it all. Manon is considered probably one of the better strikers of the division, very fast, very defensively sound. And Valentina's able to catch her, knock her down, take her down, grappler, do a little bit of everything. When you think about Zhang Weili, she's had problems with the takedown defense in the past. Most notably, if you watch the second fight with Rose Namajunas, it's 2-2 going into the fifth. Rose takes her down and gets 4 minutes of control time and wins the fifth. That's how she gets the title. She gave up 3 takedowns to Yan Zhonan, who's really not a wrestler at all. The striking exchanges with Yan Zhonan, she's getting beat up by the bigger fighter. That last fight with Tatiana Suarez, she lost the first round on all 3 judges' scorecards because Tatiana took her down. The difference is Tatiana doesn't got the back class. Tatiana doesn't have the striking. Tatiana doesn't have the 5-round cardio, so she has one good first round and then runs out of ideas. Yao Zhonan can't stuff takedowns. She's big. She's a brute. She can hurt you, but as she almost got choked unconscious at the end of the first round, let's be real. But beyond that, the longer it went, that size really did mean something. Valentina's got all of that. She's not super physically that all that much bigger. When you look at, she is 5'5" versus the 5'4" from Zhang Weili, but she's got a 3-inch reach advantage on her. She's got a lot of experience. She's just, I think, naturally the bigger girl. No world exists where Valentina makes 115 pounds. She would never be able to do it. So now you're posing a lot of problems. Yao Zhanan gave her problems because of the size. Valentina's got, I think, that size and that strength. Other girls like Tatiana were able to give her problems. Rose Namajunas were able to give her problems with the offensive wrestling, take her down, hold her down. Valentina scored takedowns in all of her fights. 2 against Manon Fiorot, 8 against Grosso, 4 against Grosso, 4 against Grosso, 3 against Taylor Santos, 3 against Lauren Murphy, 7 against Jessica Andrade, 5 against Jennifer Maia, 3 against Kaitlyn Chookagian, 1 against Liz Carmouche. All of them. So she's probably going to get takedowns in this fight as well. And then the striking, it's not big enough of a gap for you to try to outwork her and land bigger shots. She's good on the feet. And she's mixing in the takedowns. And she's a little bit bigger and stronger. The only thing that would worry me is I mentioned that Taylor Santos fight. Sometimes Shevchenko, and she is guilty of doing it with Grosso at times too, is that she's fought a lot. She's got money. She's experienced things. It's like sometimes I don't know that she's super motivated for the fights. This is a fight where it's champion versus champion, the co-main event of a giant pay-per-view, number one versus number two when you think about it. Let's go. She'll be in good shape, I believe. She'll be motivated for this fight. She should put her best foot forward. And if she does, I think she wins. So it's a Valentina Shevchenko by decision play for me.
Yeah, it's the best women's fight you could possibly make right
100%.
Now. 100%. Yeah, Val has a little bit of a reach advantage. Size just kind of plays into her favor, which is something that she, frankly, she's not the biggest. I know she did fight at 135, but like she's not the biggest, you know, 125er by any stretch of the imagination. She's given up some size in some of her fights. But I think another thing that gets a little bit overlooked is, like, you know, we kind of think because maybe she hasn't been around as long or hasn't been in the spotlight as long, but like Zhang Weili is only a year younger than Valentina Shevchenko. They're both in their late 30s at this point. So, yeah, I think it comes down to wrestling, grappling control, a fight for top position. And in that type of situation, in a fight that's basically a pick 'em, give me the bigger fighter with, frankly, a better, you know, takedown to taken down ratio. Both of them struggle with grappling. So, like, that fight for top position is going to become so very much important in this fight. But I think Valentina is going to win those exchanges. I think she can probably, you know, land the more technical strikes at range. Zhang Weili can absolutely crack. So can't wait to watch the fight. Valentina is the side for me, though. We got Sean Brady taking on Michael Morales. Sean Brady, a minus 135 favorite to come back on Morales, plus 135. Probably, I mean, we got a bunch of welterweight. It's going to be interesting who gets the next title shot after the main event, because we've got a couple contender fights in the mix here. Prates, I guess, is a little bit on the outside looking in. Leon, I guess, yeah, the winner of Brady versus Morales probably get the next shot. So who do you got in this fight, Coates?
This one's a difficult one because when you do the tape study and you break down all the actual technique, it's like Sean Brady's a better fighter. He's got a far better grappling game. And if he can get this fight to the ground, I think that he can really certainly test Michael Morales' jiu-jitsu, have spots where he holds him down. Maybe Michael Morales got a tendency to give up his back in some positions, really take advantage of him. On the other hand, you have to factor in just the size of these guys and how they stack up. And Michael Morales is a giant welterweight. He's a very, very large man. And he's 26 years old. So he's not even near the prime of his career. He's constantly getting better in between fights, and that size and that strength and that maturity is all coming along. By the numbers, he's 6 years younger than Sean Brady. He's 2 inches taller than Sean Brady. He has a 7-inch reach advantage over Sean Brady. And if I was at the bar and I told somebody, I was like, I got an underdog bet for you. And they said, oh, yeah, yeah. What was it? Michael Morales. And I said exactly that. He's 6 years younger. He's much larger. He's got a huge reach advantage. And he's by far a better striker with more than enough power to knock out Sean Brady. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, but what about his takedown defense? Because it's Sean Brady. He said, well, both of his parents are judo black belts. He's a judo black belt. And he was like a member of the Ecuadorian wrestling team for a while. So he can wrestle. It's like, yeah, but what's the flaw to his game? I don't know. He's 18-0. He's been smoking everybody.
He's been getting better.
And he's an underdog. Yeah. So what's the problem with Sean Brady? Well, Brady, first of all, his striking ain't it. Like, his striking defense is not really all that good. But beyond that, he's 5'10 with a 72-inch reach. Like, he's small by welterweight standards. He's a thick guy, sure. But outside of his UFC debut against Court McGee, and then later on against Gilbert Burns, he's not really trying to stick to the striking. It's all about, I got a high-level BJJ black belt, and I got enough wrestling to grab a hold of these guys, muscle them to the ground, and then take over. He's been doing a brilliant job of that. But you can watch certain fights like Michael Chiesa outstrikes him, right? Jake Matthews is doing more than fine on the feet with him. Bilal Muhammad boxes him up and knocks him out, right? That's what he wants to avoid. If he can punch his way into distance, grab a hold of you, take you down, that's where he's going to be in his wheelhouse for sure. And since those fights, taken down 5 times against Kelvin Gastelum, he took Gilbert Burns down 7 times, he took on Leon Edwards down 5 times. That's all fair and good. The thing is that now you're getting a guy who's very, very large for the weight class, who's a lot younger than those guys and can defend takedowns. And in his last fight against Gilbert Burns, Gilbert Burns shot 2. Got one of them. Morales just pops his hips and stands right back up, breaks the grip, turns into him, and knocks him out 30 seconds later. So he's constantly getting better. When you watch Brady's last fight against Leon Edwards, Leon's super tentative. He's not throwing anything. Brady's sitting there striking in the first round, all of a sudden being like, oh, I'm out striking this guy. He's not throwing anything back. So he starts throwing 2-3 punch combinations. Then he starts taking him down. Then Leon's corner slapping him, saying, buddy, wake up. Don't quit on yourself. Leon, come on. Don't quit on yourself. He's just going through the motions at that point because he doesn't want to be there. So it's a nice win. I'm not going to take it away from Sean Brady. He outstruck him. He outlasted him. He beat him up pretty handedly. It's a solid victory. But that's so far removed from what Michael Morales does, which is Michael loves to use the jab. And he's got a 7-inch reach advantage. Brady pulls up short on a bunch of his punches and walks into a lot of jabs. So now you're getting hit from the outside. You're going to have to shoot a desperation takedown. As you get in on this guy, you realize, oh man, he's big and he's strong. This is a 5-round fight. Brady probably maybe eventually gets his fight to the ground, maybe can wear on him, maybe can drag him into some later waters. We saw him go 5 rounds against Leon. We saw him go 4 rounds or into the fourth round. Sorry, 4 rounds against Leon, 5 rounds against Gilbert Burns. This is a 3-round fight. So this big old strong 26-year-old guy, yeah, he's going to be big and strong for at least 2 of these 3 rounds. If you don't take him down and finish him, you're probably going to get beat up standing. He throws nasty uppercuts. So like, he fights with his hands low. He waits for you to shoot. As you step in, jab, jab, you step in, he throws a rear uppercut. Really nice. It's what caught Gilbert. Big power from both sides. Unorthodox striking. He's not like a clean technical guy. He's loopy with big power, and he makes it work for himself. And as a betting underdog, of course, he's got a puncher's chance to win, but he's also got a good chance he can just stuff the takedowns and make this a real greasy fight. So last thing I'll say is that you can look back on him. When was he taken down? He got taken down against Trevin Giles. He got taken down by Adam Fugit. Well, Fugit's 6'1", has fought at 185. Trevin Giles has also fought at 185. And at that point, he's like 22 years old. Since then, and Paul mentioned this too, he's making a lot of improvements fight to fight, whereas Brady's got one trick that works extremely well. But if you can find a way to move around that, he's there to get boxed up. He's there to get knocked out. And I got a feeling that Morales is able to do that. So I don't love a decision prop. I don't love an over-under. I think Morales may knock him out. Mm-hmm. But even if he doesn't, I think he can win just 2 of the 3 rounds and get a decision on the scorecards.
Yeah, I'm generally in total agreement there. Morales is just seemingly getting better and better. And frankly, Sean Brady, not a guy that, like, I've been humbled by him a few times at this point. The grappling is super, super elite. So,
fact,
you know, we're going to find out probably on that first exchange just how good his grappling is. If he gets shook off, maybe, like, if you're the type of person who wants to wait for live betting, that type of stuff, like, you know, you may not get the plus 120 or 115, the plus 130. I feel like you're going to see pretty early on in the first 2 minutes or so, unless there's a knockout, of course. You're going to see real soon, like, how this wrestling of Sean Brady is going to work in this fight. Morales is a pick for me as well, for pretty much all the things that you highlighted. And the career trajectory for him right now is, he looks like a problem. Somebody that nobody really wants to mess with. And the Ecuadorian wrestling team, everything like that. I'm sure Team Habib, if you're Team Habib, and you're looking at this fight as a number one contenders fight, I bet you they don't want Michael Morales winning. They would welcome somebody like Sean Brady winning. What are you going to do? Go out there and out-grapple us? Okay, pal. Mike Morales is a bit of a different beast, so we'll see how it all shakes out. But Morales is the pick for me as well. We got Leon Rocky Edwards taking on Carlos Aprates. The smoker of cigs is a minus 185 favorite to come back on Leon, former champion. Plus 160. I'm probably just a fanboy. See some people taking Leon, and I get it, but it's like Leon is really kind of low volume, just doesn't really sit on his punches a lot of the time, waits too long into fights to really overexpose himself or to really get in there and make it grimy. I'm not confident that he can go out there and wrestle Carlos Prates because, like, Gary wasn't really wrestling all that much. It was more Gary's footwork that kind of, like, made that a tough fight for Prates. And even Prates didn't go away as that fight played on. I am a big favorite, a big fan of Prates. Is the price a little bit wide, perhaps? But I think Prates is a guy who's... Another guy who, you know, obviously exposed by Gary to a degree, but is, you know, still kind of on the rise. Whereas I think we've seen the best of Leon Edwards, who, frankly, we didn't really necessarily think he was ever going to get to a title, and he did. So his career definitely went above and beyond most people's expectations, but I think this is the beginning of the downfall codes. Prates for me, what about you?
Yeah, Prates as well, but it definitely feels like a trap line of sorts. And I say that because it's a lot of recency bias. People are saying Leon Edwards doesn't want to be there anymore, and he quit in his last fight. He's quit in his last two fights, and he's kind of even dating back to when he won the title over Kamaru Usman. He's losing the fight 3-1. Best case scenario for him is he's losing 3-1. And he head kicks him in the fifth round. His corner's telling him, Leon, don't quit on yourself. That fight with Bilal Muhammad, took him down nine times. His corner's saying the same thing, like, Leon, you got to get into it. The fight with Brady, you see him get finished. You see him absolutely check out in that fight. Mm-hmm. So now the narrative is obviously going to be he is older. He probably should have never even won the title, but a fifth round head kick won it for him. And then he rematched Usman, a version of Usman anyways. Not the same after that head kick, let me tell you. But all the same, he went on a little run, beat Colby Covington, and then that's it. He's at that stage of his career where he's slowing down. He was not a high-output guy, as Paul mentioned. He's, you know, outside of kicking you in the head, he's not a big power guy. He's more so just a sniper. He picks and chooses his shots. He'll land in the neighborhood of, in a 15-minute fight, say 70, 60, 70 cinnamon strikes, stuff a couple takedowns here and there and kind of outwork you, but it feels like he's going through the motions. The reason why it feels like a trap is Sean Brady took him down five times and suffocated him. Mm-hmm. Bilal Muhammad took him down nine times and suffocated him. Colby took him down twice. Usman took him down four times in the rematch. Well, the trilogy. Five times in the rematch. This is not something he's going to have to worry about with Carlos Perez. Perez is not looking to take him down. So now you're going to see Leon probably a lot more comfortable. You're going to see a striker versus striker. Leon is a very capable striker himself. Carlos Perez at times can be a little bit low volume because he's too reliant on his big power. And this ends up being striker versus striker. It's a lot closer to plus nothing because it's close to even money. I maybe think. Plus, on top of that, Prates maybe has a takedown defense issue. So maybe you see Leon Edwards take him down. Mm-hmm. The reason why I decided, you know what, I just can't do it, is one, yeah, we're getting a slightly, Prates is not young. He's slightly younger. He's a lot more, his career trajectory, as Paul said, you know, at past fights, he's maybe going to punch his ticket into title contention at some point, whereas Leon feels like he's on the back nine. But all those guys that were taking down Leon Edwards, I started to make an excuse for him. Oh, Leon just keeps getting taken down. Praise won't do that. This is interesting. Let's go back to the last time a guy didn't take down Leon Edwards. It was Nate Diaz, who almost knocked him out.
Leon Edwards was way too close.
That's Leon Edwards gave him... Nate Diaz gave him everything he could handle and almost knocked him stiff in the fifth round.
That was the free money parlay piece of the week that I had tied to everything. And I was just like, this is not as easy as it should have been. So that would be my concern.
Completely agree. Now, he did take Nate Diaz down four times, and maybe his plan is to take down Carlos Prates down four times. The counter argument to that is Nate Diaz is a former 155er. Carlos Prates is, I think he has fought at 155 a long time ago himself, but yeah, 6'1 with a 78-inch reach. He's a real big guy. And when you look at the Machado-Gary fight, it's easy to say, well, he got taken down four times there. He got taken down four times on 19 attempts and gave up only 3 minutes of control time. So, yeah, it's probably not a go-to game plan to just take him down and hold him down. And for that reason, he's probably just going to force more exchanges, lands the bigger punches, spinning elbows on the table. The guy can throw some crazy stuff. And the bigger, more impactful blows, more of them, he's either going to catch a finish or he's going to win a decision. So I do have Carlo Prates. I do not like this money line. It feels trappy to me. But I still feel like he's just at a point of his career where he's going to be a little more aggressive, a little more active, and that's all it's going to take.
We got Benil Dariush taking on Benoit St. Denis. Benoit St. Denis, a minus 185 favorite. The comeback on Dariush, plus 160. Your thoughts?
This would be a good live bet spot in that Benil Dariush might get KO'd stiff in the first round. If he does not get KO'd stiff in the first round, he's live. He's live to win this fight. Here's the biggest issue with Benil Dariush is if you were creating a fighter and you were like, I want him to have great grappling. Well, Benil's got world-class grappling. He really does. And how's his wrestling? It's actually really good. Defensively, it's good. Offensively, really not that bad. Striking, he's very, you know, a thinking fighter, high ring IQ, makes good choices, nasty body kick from that southpaw stance. Cardio, extremely good cardio. Checks out the box. Here's the thing is he's been knocked out five times in the UFC, four times in the first round. And when he gets knocked out, Ranzi Nijem knocked him out in the first round. Edson Barbosa nuked him in the first round. Alexander Hernandez, everyone remembers that one, the 42-second forearm to the face. He's been knocked down in a bunch of fights. He's been hurt in a bunch of fights. Charles Oliveira, Armin Sarukian, even that last fight with Renato Moicano. He gets knocked down in the first round and gets very hurt. You don't put this guy away. Yeah, man, he's live to just come right back into it and beat you. And that's the problem with Benoit Saint-Denis. He's more of a front runner. He likes to have his way. He's a bully. He's an excellent hammer. If this guy's just given the opportunity to tee off on you or take you down and work you over, he'll do exactly that. Very, very physically strong, decent output, good cardio, a guy that's really going to put it on you. Every time he's been put into a nail situation, he wears a lot of damage, tons of swelling, tons of cuts. The fact that Renato Moicano was able to take him down is not a good sign because Moicano's got bad wrestling. And I'm not using MMA math, but Moicano tried to take down Benil, didn't go good for him. Got vastly out-wrestled in that fight. And yet he took down Benoit once and put on a lot of damage, 10-8 of him in the first round after he took his back. People remember the Elizu Zaleski dos Santos fight in Benoit's UFC debut. Took a lot of damage in that fight. His fight with Dustin Poirier, he's beating Dustin Poirier until he starts to tire, and Poirier seriously knocks him with a punch combination and then is able to take him down and put him away. So he kind of just takes a lot of damage. He leaves a lot of openings, and the longer the fight gets extended, I feel like he's going to make a mistake. Even in his two fights back against Kyle Prepelic, Kyle Prepelic's winning the striking exchanges, which causes Benoit to just be like, you know what, I'm just going to shoot takedowns, which is all fine and good. It'll work against Kyle. It'll work
cash
against
that over by 5 seconds for us too.
Oh, I know. Those are good times. And he cashed a plus money ticket for us. We bet him as the betting underdog against Mauricio Ruffi his last time out. But Benil's not one of these. He's a flake and you got to worry about it. Well, if he gets knocked down in the first round, yeah, that's most definitely on the table. He's been knocked down in the first round a bunch. Beyond that, I think if he shoots a takedown, although he's not used his wrestling offensively all that much in a while, I think that offensively, if he can get on top, we're looking good. If he can keep this fight standing, yeah, Kyle's giving you problems and using a switch stance and using his, his left side weaponry extremely well. Benil will do the same thing. We can keep this fight standing. We can win this thing. If we can get on top of him with our takedowns, we can win this thing. How does Benoit win it outside of puncher's chance nukes us in the first round, which is possible. I get it. Well, how does he all of his fights, he goes to his wrestling. He wants to wrestle. And therein lies the great thing here about Benil Dariush. But Neil Dariush has only been taken down by one guy in the last 8 years. Only one man has taken him down in the last 8 years, and it's Gamrot. And Gamrot goes like 4 for 18 and gets like 2 minutes of control time. It averaged out at 30 seconds per takedown until Beneil just got right back up. And Gamrot's a far superior wrestler than Benoit Saint-Denis. Better cardio, better pace. Maybe not better pace, but all I'm saying is that simply just taking down Beneil and hanging out in his guard, that's not really something people do. If he takes you down, you're in a lot of trouble. If you take him down, I don't really think he's in all that much trouble. If we can keep this fight standing and just not get KO'd stiff in the first 3 to 5 minutes, he's going to get going. But live bet, if we get beat up in the first, just kind of like Moicano had a lot of moments in the first, but we can get out of it, you'll get a much better number than you are getting now. Beyond that, I kind of just am going to go with Beneil Dariush to make some magic happen, man. Again, we cashed a ticket on him his last time out as well against Moicano, where he had to overcome some real bad spots, but he shows you that back class. He shows you that he's got the skill in all areas. Although I am worried about Benoit just catching him with something, this is a step up, not a step up in competition from what Benoit's been fighting necessarily, but it's a, he's a class opponent that maybe isn't going to make that mistake where Benoit makes a whole lot of mistakes. I just think that Benoit makes a mistake and then Beneil capitalizes. So it's a Dariush pick for me, but I can see this thing completely blowing up in my face and looking awful.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add to that, to be perfectly honest. I'd prefer, because of the first round knockout risk that is with every single Dariush fight, to kind of just watch, see how it plays out a little bit. And I think, you know, we saw it particularly in the Dustin Poirier fight for Benoit Saint-Denis. That's like, if he's struggling to get those takedowns, if he's having to put in a lot of work, he's not above gassing. Like, I even think in, like, the Prepelic fight that, like, if he didn't get that completely out of there, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Maybe he slows down round three. That probably doesn't necessarily change the result of the fight because he was, you know, when he was gaining those the top control, everything like that, like, he was definitely controlling, dominating, everything like that. But we've seen BSD, you know, gas a bunch of times, and I don't think no, that was in Quebec, wasn't it?
And Kyle Prepelic came in on 3 days' notice, and the UFC asked Benoit Saint-Denis. They said Matheus Gamrot has got his hand up saying he'll take the fight, and he was like, "No, I will not fight him." They said Matheus Rebecki has his hand up and will take the fight. He says, "No, I will not fight him." That rat garbage Mandel Naylor from the Contender Series this season, he put his hand up and was like, "I'll fight you." And Benoit turned him down too, and specifically took Kyle Prepelic.
Turning down rat garbage.
Yeah, because it's like, well, he's really big and he's an older guy that's got some experience, and I would rather fight Kyle. Yeah, and he's got some power, and I would rather fight Kyle Prepelic. So that was the hand-selected opponent that he took. When you look at Beneil, Beneil's fought Matheus Gamrot and beat him. And if this fight was Rebecca versus Beneil, I would also take Beneil in that fight as well. You know, to me, he's a guy that's capable of hanging with guys in the top five to the top 10. BDS has had a taste of that, but he kind of folds like a lawn chair. And I mentioned it already. It's an excellent hammer, not exactly a great nail. And Beneil, if you do not finish him right away, at some point you're going to face adversity against him because he's not a walkthrough.
No.
And so I'm getting plus money as it is now, like plus 155. I could probably get better plus money if he drops the first round, but you see BDS start huffing and puffing. Dude won the first round against Poirier. He's not a joke, right?
No,
but if you don't put him away,
particularly early,
yeah, make him work. And I think that's something that Dariush is capable of doing.
Yeah, we're on the same page there. All right, we got Bo Nickel taking on Rodolfo Vieira. Bo Nickel, minus 229 favorite to come back on Vieira, plus 194. Who you got?
This fight, the matchmaking really for Bo Nickel, it just doesn't make any sense. Here's a guy that is, you know, probably Olympic quality of wrestler, and he's a national champion, and he's All-American status, and he's out of Penn State, which is apparently not a very nice school, but from a wrestling standpoint, the best school for wrestling. Yeah, it's like this is a guy that can maybe come into the UFC and add other skills to his game and be really good. They brought him on the Contender Series twice. He gets takedowns. He smashes the guy. Jamie Pickett, Cody Brundage, uses his wrestling. He's taking these guys down. He beats him. Val Woodburn, he kind of closed his eyes and threw a punch and knocked him out. But wrestling is clearly his game, and I think you want to build this guy up. The fans love him or hate him. They're into him. Websites love quoting him. Websites love seeing what he's up to. He generates some pop from the wrestling audience, also from fighters I want to see him get beat and different things. I don't know. I think he's someone that you would like to work with. He's only 29 years old. He's at American Top Team. Why wouldn't you want to work with this guy? Then this is where I mean the weird matchmaking. They give him Paul Craig. Well, Paul Craig's not really someone you can use your wrestling against. I mean, maybe you could, but his only path to victory is hitting you with a triangle choke. So you're not going to take Paul Craig down. And he doesn't look good. They'll say he won a 30-27 and he outstruck him, but he barely outstruck him in all three rounds. Like, it's margins of one or two strikes in all three rounds. He does not look good, but he doesn't use his wrestling. They follow that up by giving him Rinner to Ritter. It's another fight that's weird because he probably does not want to take Rinner down. You gave him a BJJ world champion and one of the best MMA grapplers of all time in Paul Craig, upset specialist, I get it. And then you're following that up by giving him Rodolfo Vieira, who one has a 100% takedown defense in the UFC. But that is mostly because nobody wants to take him down. Whose game plan is to go out there and shoot takedowns on Rodolfo Vieira? Mm-hmm. So you're taking a guy that can't strike. And I say that because he could not strike against Paul Craig. He looked awful. And he could not strike against Rinner de Ritter. And he looked awful. And this fight was only 6 months ago against RDR. So in 6 months, did he get much better at throwing punches and kicks? No. But he still got his wrestling. Only let's give him another opponent that he, in theory, is not going to take down. If he does take him down, he might be in water, hot water. And if he doesn't take him down, he's forced to strike with him. And if he's forced to strike to him, dare I say Rodolfo Vieira actually might outstrike Bo Nickel in a striking match.
Or at the very least, it's close, and it's a +200 ticket.
That's +200.
That was my first. It's my first bet. It was my first bet on the card.
But you know me and Rodolfo Vieira. I love fading this guy's ass.
You do.
And
you faded him against Petrosky, and it was smart.
Faded him against Petrosky. I had him against Trayshawn Gore, who's just not good. And against that level. But yeah, I tried to fade him against Armin Petrosian, pretty good. Dustin Stolfus at one time. A lot of guys, it's like I don't give him enough credit because I think he's just one of these older BJJ black belt world champion guys that if the jiu-jitsu don't work, he's got nothing to fall back on. But that's not the case. Although he lost to Petrosky, that fight was almost entirely on its feet. Mm-hmm. Petrosky wrestled in college. He shot two takedowns, didn't get none of them. But Rodolfo was able to get a takedown on him. And also just, you know, he's mechanical. He's stiff. He's a little bit rigid. But he landed 89 in his last fight against Trayshawn Gore. He's comfortable enough to throw a punch, two punches, maybe a three-punch combination if need be. He will shoot 10, 15, 20 takedowns if that's the path he wants to go with it. And a guy like that can just keep this fight close for two of the three rounds. The fans, they love booing Bo Nickel. They hate him. And if he's in a fight where he's jabbing and throwing inside low kicks and jabbing and throwing inside low kicks and a little overhand right and kind of going through the motions like he did against Paul Craig, and they're booing him, and he's not using his wrestling, Rodolfo's simply coming forward most of the time and, you know, kind of keeping this close and competitive, why would you want a Bo Nickel 220 ticket on this thing? So I feel like I got to take Rodolfo, even though I'm not a Rodolfo guy. Too much value there. PRP pick, Rodolfo Vieira. Don't love it. I really don't. But there's some serious value there, I'll admit. And I maybe want to take a little whiff.
Yeah, I already bet it. Bet it at like +205. See where the market goes. I'll play more if they want. If Bo Nickel wants to surge later on, sure, I'll do it again. Because like,
even if
it comes down to a 50-50 striking affair and it's like a Paul Craig type of situation, just like if I lose that type of decision, so be it. You know what I mean? I'm happy to put my money in those positions because over time they will play out. If Bo Nickel goes out there tries to wrestle Rodolfo Vieira, okay, well, like, let's go right into the Thunderdome. I'm sure Rodolfo would gladly accept that. And yeah, we've just seen twice now that, you know, I mean, maybe Bo's made massive improvements to his striking game, but we've seen twice now that it's just like against guys where the, you know, the grappling isn't really necessarily an option for him. The one part of his game is a little bit lacking. So it is weird matchmaking, as you said. It's almost like he's maybe behind closed doors asking for way too much money, and the UFC's just making it real hard on him.
That's what I think too, man. That was going to be my greasy theory, is that he signed a 6-fight deal coming out of the Contender Series because they like him. A standard deal is 4 fights. They like Bo Nickel. They want to market him. They give him a 6-fight deal. This is the end of his deal. Now, if you think about it, he lost his last fight against Rinner where they want to test him. We're paying this guy a bunch of money. His base salary apparently is only like 30, 40, but he's reported to make in the neighborhood of $200,000 per fight. If he wins, 100 and 100, let's call it. After he lost to Rinner to Ritter, he took a wrestling match on one of those Real American Wrestling shows. And maybe he wants to go back to wrestling. Maybe he wants to do something else. But he was initially on the UFC 222 main card, right? And then now they've since dropped him from the main card, put him on the prelims, and given him a very unsexy fight. Like, if you win, no one's going to care. It's Rodolfo Vieira. He's old man. He's not good. And if you lose, your competitive MMA career at an elite level is done. So, and they're putting you on the prelims. And in the matchmaking on, it's weird. So it's entirely possible that they said, listen, Bo came in because he's got the status and because he's got sponsorships and because he's got some hype and he's undefeated. We're going to pay him a bunch of money. And then eventually you're off. He looked bad against Cody Brundage, right? You remember that fight, UFC 300. Brundage just sat there like a turtle up against the cage, and Bo just sat there and waited. He didn't look good. He looks awful against Paul Craig. Looks awful against Rinner de Ritter. Now you're giving him Rodolfo, where it's hard to look good. Even if you do beat him, it's hard to look good. All of a sudden, it's like everyone's out on the Bo game. He's not undefeated anymore. He's not a world beater. No one's talking about this guy fighting Khamzat Chimaev anymore. Those talks are long gone, but you're still paying him a bunch of money because that's the contract you signed him to. So they may be looking to get out of the Bo game. And if that's the case, give me the good underdog plus money, man. Maybe take the plus money. That's the greasy theory on that one. We can move on.
All right. We got Gregory Rodriguez taking on Roman Kopylov. Rodriguez minus 180 favorite. The comeback on Roman plus 155. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez just smashes him up. But, you know, like everything, he tends to make things a lot harder on himself a lot of the time. Even that last fight against Jack Hermanson, he kicks his ass. And Jack's not landing anything. There's a little jab here, a little right hand that maybe partially grazes. And then all of a sudden, RoboCop's face is busted. He's bleeding from both sides. There's like 3 lacerations on his face from nothing landing. You go back to the Jared Cannonier fight. I think it was a bad weight cut, led to the later rounds he tired, but did get knocked out. He got knocked out by Bruno Ferreira in the first round. He's been knocked out by Jordan Williams on the Contender Series in the first round. His first pro loss back in the day in Brazil is 1 minute into the first round by knockout. He's been knocked down. Not Iron Turtle didn't knock him down, but you remember that fight. He's on his way to get knocked out before countering. His chin's a massive liability, and because he's so big at 185 pounds, I honestly think that the weight cuts are just hurting him, that guys are going to be able to hit him and knock him out. Roman Kopylov's a good striker. He fights a straight linear, you know, likes to catch you on the end of his shots. And although I wouldn't rate him as a huge power puncher per se, he's got more than enough power that I think he could hurt RoboCop. He could get this thing into the later rounds and just have him busted up, and visually damage is going to count for something. He can keep this thing close and competitive. The real nature of it is that Rodriguez is a BJJ black belt. He can wrestle, and he fights hyper-aggressive. Kopylov's looking to set up. Kopylov's looking to set traps, use his footwork, and fight long. RoboCop doesn't let you set up. He's constantly in your face. And because he's got that ability to, just like Christian Leroy Duncan, how good is that guy? Yeah, well, if you don't want him dancing all around you and throwing these crazy techniques, stuff him up against the cage and take him down. That's what he did. He looked really good in that fight.
That fight aged very, very well for him.
So good. You know what didn't age well for Roman Kopylov? Allowing Paulo Costa to snap a 4-5 fight losing streak. Cesar Almeida, he greased him on a split decision that he was absolutely gassed in. And Chris Curtis was beating him up until he finished him with a second left in the fight. So maybe not beating him, but it was very close and competitive fight where he was getting outworked.
Yeah, gassing hard in the Cesar Almeida fight was very ugly. Yeah, very ugly, because like Cesar Almeida completely helpless,
so helpless
off of his back. So it's like, if G-Rod is controlling you and he's forcing the issue, well, you know what's even more tiring than trying to hold somebody down is like some big behemoth light heavyweight fighting at middleweight, frankly, who is trying to hold you in place, like trying to fight yourself out of those types of situations. Easier said than done. Now you know, his takedown defense has been pretty solid. Obviously, Fluffy is one of the only guys derived.
But he Roberson took him down.
That one seems bad, but that's 2019. Like, yeah, I'm not really going to factor that in all that much. But he gasses when he's taken down. So it's kind of like a first-round KO. I'm scrolling through right now. You know what I don't see? Any first-round KOs on Roman Kovalev. He's not the biggest power puncher. Could he win by first-round knockout? I think it's 100% in play. But, yeah, I'm going to have to trust G-Rod this week, you know, if in parlays and stuff like that. Because, you know, if I'm going to build some parlays between all of the other regional MMA that is going on and want to fit somebody in at a reasonable price on this UFC card, G-Rod's one of the favorites I trust.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. And the Jared Cannonier fight, if it was only a three-rounder, G-Rod would have won it. Then he'd be on a five-fight winning streak. Five-fight winning streak with the last three being Jack Hermanson, Jared Cannonier, and Christian Leroy Duncan. Drop Cannonier twice in the first round, which almost nobody does. He can strike. He's got power. He can wrestle. Roman Kopylov looked real bad in his last fight against Paulo Costa. I think it's all lining up. And you mentioned the Anthony Hernandez fight. Paulo's not going to take you down. He wants to bang. Chris Curtis is not going to take you down. I don't think he's ever even attempted to take down the UFC. Cesar Almeida is not going to take you down. Quite literally, he doesn't know how. The last guy that he's fought that had grappling, Anthony Hernandez, just dumped him a bunch of times. And then he severely gassed from having to work his way back up. And then he got choked out. So RoboCop in a five-round fight, maybe the weight cut catches up to him. In a three-round fight, I think he's good to go. He was minus 160. You can see the numbers starting to come in on him. I feel like he's not one of the huge favorites on the card this week, but he could look really good and is a less than 2-1. So I like RoboCop Rodriguez.
We got Aaron Blanchfield taking on Tracy Cortez. Blanchfield is a minus 235 favorite to come back on Cortez, plus 200. This is a rematch, and Cortez won a split decision between the two of them. And the first time that they fought, Blanchfield had a bunch of success early, fishing for the neck, looking for submissions. But as the fight wore on, Tracy's kind of able to win control. Where are you at with the rematch between these two girls?
Yeah, here's where I'm at in the rematch. So like Paul said, they fought 6 years ago in Invicta, and it was a close fight, competitive, split decision win. I agree. Tracy Cortez won the first two rounds. I scored the third round for Aaron Blanchfield. Here's the difference, that Tracy Cortez was 26 years old and Aaron Blanchfield was 19.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot has changed since then, and mostly for Aaron Blanchfield. Tracy Cortez fights the exact same way she did back then. She can wrestle, but she gets taken down a whole bunch. Takedown defense is not great. Takedown offense, although it's okay, she's not great at holding control time. She's there to good submission defense and all that, but when the fight's standing, she steps in and she chucks a couple good shots. That year that she beat Blanchfield on a split. That gets her on the Contender Series where she beats Agapova by decision, did not age well, and then that gets her UFC debut, all in 2019. Since then, she fought once in 2020, once in 2021, once in 2022, once in 2023, once in 2024, and this will be actually her second fight of 2025. She's not been active at all. More disheartening is that when you watch that Invicta fight, right, the fight starts and they kind of pull a UFC where they'll put up a tweet, and whoever's tweet they put up, it's like, yeah, she's the finest chick in MMA. It's like, whoa, Invicta's all about women's rights and all chick cards, and they put that up on the screen, but that became her thing, is that she's a mega babe and she's marketable. And I don't really see her making a ton of improvements, but she got the fake eyelashes and she comes to weigh-ins. And it starts with the Rose Namajunas fight where Rose punches her square in the face and the eyelash comes off. And then she goes to her corner between rounds. And it's like, that was her source of power. You know, she looked deflated in that fight, got hit, got taken down, got out wrestled. No. Then the next fight with Viviana Arroyo, she looked a lot better, but she's having trouble making the weight. She did officially miss weight against Justine Quiche back in 2021. She's not been active. She's getting older. She had to cut her hair to make weight the last time out. Just kind of feel like she's got a bunch of injuries. She's slowing down, and she doesn't really have this style that wins by large leaps and bounds. You know, the wrestling, she'll take you down, you get right back up. The striking, you know, you land one, she'll land two, but she's not super high volume, and she really doesn't have all that much power. And then the last thing is, and you'd have to be Christian or Catholic or whatever, but if you're into the Bible, Samson's hair, man. Like, once they cut Samson's hair, he lost his power. He was done. His chick betrayed him. That's the eyelashes for her. So all you really got to do is knock one of them and lodge it off. Done. Done. Erin Blanchfield, meanwhile, yeah, she's 26 years old. And to be honest, when you watch that first fight with when you watch the first fight in Invicta, she gets taken down the first round. The second round, it's, you know, her getting held up against the cage. The third round, she gets a takedown, and then you see her go to work. When she's taken down in the first, she throws up an armbar, almost gets it. The second round, she gets taken down. She goes for the armbar again. The third round, she ends up on top, and yeah, she only gets about 90 seconds of control time. You can see this is a 19-year-old fighter who's coming forward, landing shots, and is going to be something. Since then, she's done exactly that. She's matured. She's been winning some real good fights. Her last 10 minutes against Rose Namajunas, out wrestles her, takes her down twice, out strike her, did everything you'd want her to do. Manon Fiorot, she couldn't take her down. She still hung. She still landed 130 significant strikes and went five rounds with her extremely competitively. I feel like she's made a lot of progress in the 6 years since they met last. From a 19-year-old to a 26-year-old is pretty big. Tracy, meanwhile, from a 25-year-old to a 31-year-old, I've personally not seen her evolve her game all that much. I think Blanchfield's live to take her down and give her all types of problems. And if she doesn't take her down, she's going to come forward. She's going to throw punches. She's going to try to outwork her, and she's going to press her up against the cage, all of which should lead to a decision victory for Erin Blanchfield. So that's my play on that one.
Makes sense. The biggest improvement is probably Erin Blanchfield's stand-up game. And I will say that the, you know, her and Fatima Klein, her main training partner, both fighting on the same card, both trying to peak at the same time, that can't hurt as well. Plus, they're like Jersey girls, you know, it's basically a home game for them as well on top of all of that. So Blanchfield, in a fight that, I guess, until you kind of started talking, it scared me a little bit. I was never considering Cortez. Like, Cortez has been someone I've tried to fade, and it's cost me money because, like, she's always been pretty sizable favorite in some of the spots that I've tried to fade her. But, you know, she's a solid fighter. They're both solid. But, yeah, a lot of what you say, Blanchfield's, the age, everything like that from their previous matchup makes a lot of sense to me. So,
since her and Brian Ortega broke up, they just both haven't been the same, Paul. Just both haven't been the same.
Do you think that's connected?
No. Actually, Tracy won her last fight and didn't look terrible. Let's be real. I just think Blanchfield is, she's 26. She's going to fight for the title at some point. She's looking good. She's getting better. And I think you summed it up easily just with this one line. What has changed the most in the last 6 years? Blanchfield's striking. That is what changed the most. Mm-hmm. They're wrestling, they're grappling. All that's the same. Tracy's striking, her wrestling, it's pretty well the same. Is that Blanchfield's gone from a 19-year-old jiu-jitsu girl to someone who's capable of fighting on the feet for 25 minutes with Manon Fiorot without looking vastly out of place. So that is the big difference maker, and that's what's going to lead Blanchfield to, maybe she wins the split this time. Instead of losing the split, the decision will be in her favor.
Yeah. Blanchfield by decision, minus 133 is not horrible. That's the best price I see. Plus, minus 150 at more popular sports books, I suppose. But that or... it's chalky as hell, but like the over 2.5 at like minus 400 ish, like it'll probably make its way into some of my parlay stuff this week as well. Just because, I mean, it's not rocket science. Look at Tracy Cortez's UFC record here, guys. Decision. Literally every single fight has went to decision. Sure, it's priced at 80%, but we're hitting at 100% clip, right here. So that's where I'm at with that. We got Malcolm Wellmaker taking on Cody Haddon. Wellmaker, a minus 161 favorite to come back on Haddon, plus 141. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to take Cody Haddon, and I'm not going to be feeling great about it. Malcolm Wellmaker, this kid hits hard. He's fast. He's, again, I've used the term sniper before. That is Malcolm Wellmaker. He picks and chooses his punches really good. He's capable of fighting long, good footwork, baits you into coming in. And when this guy hits you, specifically with his right hook, it's lights out. It's not like he hurts you. It's you're out the whole way out. So when you see these like memes online and stuff, it'll be like, oh, build the greatest fighter of all time. It's like, oh, Miracle Krokop's left high kick, Alex Pereira's left hook, this guy's cardio, Clay Guida's prime cardio, and this guy, Brock Lesnar's this. Really, Malcolm Wellmaker's right hook is about as good of a right hook as you've ever seen. It's very fast. It comes in tight and delivers a ton of power. The thing is that I know from being in this game for a long time that these really good-looking prospects will come around, and they'll win their first two, three, four fights by really quick first-round knockout, and the market just dives towards them. And all of a sudden, this guy can't do no wrong. Thing with Malcolm Wellmaker is I think he's extremely talented. He's not really had to show you anything other than he can knock you out in the first round. I don't know that his cardio is all that good. I don't know that his durability is all that good. I don't know that there's not other ways to beat him. But Paul and I have discussed this pretty well every time he fights, and it never means anything because he proceeds to knock out his opponent in the first round. But just 2 years ago, he's winning a split decision over Zachariah Camara on the regional scene, mm-hmm. and he won a majority decision over Taylor Moore. Yep. In both of those fights, which are just 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's not, oh, 2 years ago he was 23 years old, and now, no, 2 years ago he's 29. Now he's 31. But 2 years ago, regional-level guys are able to give him a go. If you don't get slept in the first round, then he hits a legendary run here. He jumps on the Contender Series, and he gets a first-round knockout. They give him Cameron Simon, who's got durability issues, and he gets a first-round knockout. They give him Chris Moutinho, who's defensively a giant liability.
And it was a huge number against Moutinho.
Yeah, and then, you know, he proceeds to knock him out in the first round. And if he was going to fight Siri City, who was the original scheduled opponent in this fight, I would have taken him. I think he's faster, I think he's got better striking, and he's going to hit this guy coming in. The problem with Cody Haddon is that he's never been finished. He's undefeated as an amateur, undefeated as a pro. Or sorry, not undefeated as a pro. He's got one loss to Steve Ersig, but it went to decision. And Steve Ersig eventually ended up fighting for a title, so that one didn't really age bad. More so than that is that he fights constantly coming forward. He's a three-time Australian junior national champion boxer. He's a BJJ purple belt. He's a training partner of Quinlan Salkill. I think this kid comes forward. He throws a lot of strikes. Now, his last fight, it's a very difficult fight when you look at tape and you think, he fights kind of sloppy in that fight, and his hands are very, very low against Dan Argueta. If he fights like that against Malcolm Wellmaker, he's never been knocked out before. Yeah, well, there's a first time for everything. And if you fight like that, maybe get knocked out. Here's the thing about that one. Dan Argueta shot 24 takedown attempts. Mm-hmm. So you fought with his hands low because he knew Dan Argueta's only shooting takedowns, and he's going to shoot a bunch of them. Argueta also missed weight. Argueta is also a guy that has been on steroids at points of his career and is just a lot further along. He only gave up 4 takedowns, almost no control time, got back up, landed 140 significant strikes, cardio checked out, throws in combination, good power. This fight with Billy Brand. Billy Brand's no good on the Contender Series, don't get me wrong, but it's the same thing, is that he's only 27 years old. He's not fought in a year. You're going to see big improvements from these guys. His boxing is tight. His fundamentals are good. He moves forward almost constantly. His cardio is good. It really comes down to how good is his chin. Because Malcolm touches it, it's going to be a problem. If Malcolm doesn't just knock him out in the first round, I think Cody Haddon is going to be a real big problem. Because now Malcolm's getting taken to the deeper waters, and he's getting hit, and he's getting backed up. And those are certain things that maybe you haven't seen from him at this level before. So it's an underdog. He's an underdog, and it's closer to a 50-50 fight. Malcolm either knocks him out, or I think Cody outworks him, presses him backwards, and starts landing those meaningful shots. Because I'm getting plus money on one of them, and his name happens to be Cody, twist my arm, I'll take Cody Haddon to spring an upset here. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Haddon opened up as the favorite at opener, no?
Let me pull that up here. He did, but I mean, you know.
For 2 seconds. But now you see everyone, oh, Malcolm Wellmaker plus money. Bang, 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 bang. Because puncher's chance and a half. If you can get him at plus money, this is a really good play. He's no longer plus money.
For four minutes.
And then I think that's where I'm talking about this recency bias of Malcolm's looked really good, and he could be the real deal. And people will back that. They will 100% back that. Whereas I got Haddon, who to me is a little more proven, been off a year. Last time you saw him, he's 26. Now he's 27. can throw output, has power, can grapple as well. His grappling's fine.
Competitive with Steve Ursag in there. Trust me, brother, you're looking at a guy who is faded and lost and look like a complete moron twice now against Malcolm Wellmaker. But you know what they say.
I'm willing to hurt again, baby.
I didn't hear no bell.
All right, I love it. Let's go.
Let's go again. Let's go again. And then, you know, if they want to make him a favorite guy, it's like you watch that type of tape, and sometimes this happens in the MMA game. It's just like you see those things. Maybe those things don't exist anymore. But like those holes in the game and stuff. But it's like we haven't had the fight hasn't been able to mature enough to get to a situation where we see him take over. So let's go, Cody. Not you, Cody. I'm talking to Cody Haddon here. Let's
that's fine all the same.
Redemption time. Redemption time for old Paul Sheg. Anyway, we got Gerald Meerschaert taking on Kyle Daukaus. Daukaus, the second biggest favorite on the card. Third biggest favorite on the card. Minus 430. Come back on Gerald. Plus 330. Daukaus, I mean, it's one of those types of things. He's like a guy who was cut from the UFC. A guy who, didn't show his best stuff. Even like on his some of his fights getting back to the UFC. Not like the greatest look, but he's got all kind of like the pieces to give Gerald all of the problems in the world. And I think even if he like goes into Gerald's guard, which he should probably try to avoid like the plague, I feel like even if he does that,
he'd be fine.
He can survive in there and stay out of trouble. The biggest, even like this Keenan Pasher Patterchuk fight from CFFC. Like, Patterchuk's been on a nice run since that fight, man. Yeah. That guy's been doing some good stuff over on the regional scene. And his game's definitely coming around. Outside of, getting chin checked a couple times happens in MMA, but Gerald's probably one of the softest hitters in the entire division. Better striker, Daukaus, better submission artist, sure, Gerald, but it's like he historically just doesn't have like great wrestling to get the fight where he needs to. Everything points towards Daukaus winning. How does he win? When does he win? I'm not entirely sure. But laying the chalk with Kyle Daukaus, myself, what about you?
Yeah, the whole thing with Gerald is his entire game is Homer Simpson, his opponent. He will just take the beating, and if you tire out from beating him up, he'll take over. But guys that don't have cardio issues, guys that don't have submission defense issues, those guys tend to beat him more often than not. And unlike Homer Simpson, who apparently could take an absolute beating, Gerald cannot take the beating. Again, here's a guy that knocked out against Thiago Santos, knocked down against Oscar Pechoda, but he ended up winning that fight, knocked out against Ian Heinisch in a minute 14, knocked out against Hamzat Chimaev in 17 seconds, knocked out against Joe Pyfer 3 minutes into the first round, knocked out against his last time out, sorry, against Mikey O in the first round. But even Rinner de Ridder knocked him down, but then submitted him. Andre Petroski knocked him down, then ended up winning a split decision. He's been knocked down like 8 times in the UFC. He's been knocked out 5 times in the UFC. I think 4 of them inside of the first round. His durability is, it was never good, but at this point, it's gone. Now he's on a 3-fight losing streak. He's 37 years old. I just really don't know how he gets it done. His wrestling's not good enough. You saw that against Mikey O, where he went 0-3 in takedowns. And then the fight before that against Brad Tavares, he went 0-8 in takedowns. If you're not taking down Brad Tavares or Mikey O, your wrestling's really not good. And your submission game, although it's not bad, and it can work over Edmund Shabazian, who's tired and has bad submission grappling, over a black belt like Daukaus, I'm not seeing it. Meerschaert also sometimes he fights this. He's not huge for the weight class, but he can kind of just tire you out and wear on you. Whereas Daukaus is much bigger, man. He's 6'2", sometimes listed as tall as 6'3", a big guy. So the regional scene was good for him, man. Here's a dude that remember the PRP we hit where he beat Kevin Holland, but then they rewinded it and they saw it was a headbutt knocked Kevin Holland down, and then he just jumps on Kevin Holland's back and chokes him out with a rear naked choke. They rolled it in a contest and cut my PRP winnings in half on that night. That was like, dude, Doukas is capable of hanging out with some of the better guys. Since then, it's maybe a durability issue. Maybe a big guy can knock him out. A Roman Delitz is able to knock him out. And Eric Anders is able to knock him out. I'm not seeing knockout
power. Getting knocked out by Anders is a bad look.
Well, it is and it isn't. Anders, even though I don't rate him as a big power puncher, he has knockout wins over Chris Weidman. I get it, a ghost. He knocked out Kyle Doukas. He has knocked out Vinicius Moreira. He's knocked out Tim Williams. He knocked out Rafael Natal.
So it's like some of the worst guys who have ever been in the division.
Some of the worst
outside
guys
in the division. Outside of Weidman, yeah. Who is old.
He was very broken. Old, yeah. Yeah. No, Anders is not exactly a huge power puncher, but he looked good in the first round in that fight. And then the second round, he gets taken down. He gets ground and pounded out. It's not a great look. The thing with Gerald is, when was the last time Gerald's knocked out anybody?
Nobody.
He is effectively knocked out. Yeah, nobody. Not in the UFC.
Doc
oh, yeah,
is Eric's KO. Doc is by KO plus 215. I just hit some.
Is that what the number is on it?
That's not where you play. Not where you play. But well, that's a good where I play. Plus 175, I think, where you play. It's other people are seeing it. And I'm not missing it, so I just clicked.
I'm seeing it too. Last thing I will say is, as Paul mentioned, the regional being good for Doukas is that Doukas won the CFFC champ, and he went the distance with Greg Ellis. It's a 4-round title fight because he didn't lose any of the rounds. But all the same, he looked good through 20 minutes of fighting there. Didn't seem like it was going to be a problem. The next fight after that, he went into the third round against Sean Connor Fallon. His cardio did not look like an issue. Then he knocks out Patterchuk. Then he knocks out Michel Pereira. You'll remember this. I was backing against Michel Pereira at plus money. Big guy, talented guy. And one of those guys, kind of like last week's Vince Morales. So not Vince Morales. Bail me out on this one. Joseph Morales. Should have never got cut. What did he do to get cut? It's cool that he's worked his way back, and you're seeing him that he's got legitimate skills. Gerald Meerschaert's on a 3-fight losing streak, 37 years old, on his way out. Doukas is the guy to put that nail in the coffin. So inside the distance, by TKO. Possibly in the first round, all avenues that you'd maybe consider going down with this one.
100%. All right, this next fight, pretty tricky. Pretty tricky, I feel like. You got Chepe Mariscal taking on Pat Sabatini. Pat Sabatini, minus 135 favorite to come back on Mariscal, plus 115.
The rematch you never saw coming.
And it's all going to come down to the takedown, right? Like, yeah. Let's face it. Chepe is a better striker, throws better with his hands, pressure. I mean, Pat Sabatini is pretty one-dimensional. He's a little bit like an old-school type of fighter in that respect, because, like, I really haven't seen, like, the rest of his game keep up. But that grappling, like, if he gets a hold of you and he gets on top of you, he's elite. He's in the division elite. He would be an elite fighter if he had those other skills, but he's very good at one part of the martial arts, which keeps him around at this level. Don't get me wrong, but I've always struggled handicapping Pat Sabatini. I have no idea where to go with this fight. Where are you at with this one, Coates?
Yeah, I actually ended up going Pat Sabatini. So these guys fought back in the day. Pat Sabatini won a split decision over Chepe. Now they're running it back in the UFC. Does anything change? Tons of stuff has changed. But the same path to victory, I think, exists for Pat Sabatini, which is score the takedowns, grind this guy out. Submitting him, not likely, but positional awareness with the takedowns. Chepe's a judo black belt. His takedown defense isn't bad. His get-up game's really not bad. But everyone's been taking him down. Ricardo Ramos took him down last fight. Damon Jackson took him down. Morgan Charrier took him down twice and arguably won because of the takedowns. That takedowns are on the table. And the thing with Pat Sabatini, as Paul mentioned, he says he can strike. He claims he can strike. The thing is that every time he tries to show the world that he can strike, he gets punched in the face and gets knocked out instantly.
Yeah, Diego Lopez, I remember watching like the pre-fight interview where he was just like, everyone thinks I'm going to try to take this guy down, but I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to stand the puck. I'm like, no, you idiot. As soon as I heard that, I'm like, well, there goes that.
You know what, man? That's exactly it. That was the greatest pre-fight interview. You knew your money was dead in the water the second he said it. He's like, everybody knows I can wrestle and grapple. I'm going to show them something they haven't seen tonight. Okay, well, they've seen the wrestling and the grappling. So doing something they haven't seen means you're not going to wrestle or grapple. Stiffed instantly. Well, Diego hits hard. This is fair. This is fair. Damon Jackson, I think it might have been his grandma, might have been his mom. Somebody died like a few days before, and so he just went in full YOLO mode and just start throwing punches. He stiffed him too. If you watch back his fight with Jamal Emmers, Jamal Emmers is kicking his ass. Why he follows him to the ground, I can't tell you. But the facts remain that if you can force Sabatini to throw punchy kicky, he's done. And Chepe might be able to do that. Now, although Chepe's not knocked anybody out in the UFC, he's been a decision machine. Jack Jenkins by TKO, but he busted his leg. Prior to coming to the UFC, he was stiffing a whole bunch of opponents, knocking them out second round, third round, first round, putting hands on guys. Pat Sabatini seems like the type of guy that Chepe could knock out. So if you could get a good plus money on a Chepe by knockout, I see it. I completely see it. But for me, Chepe gives up takedowns to all of his opponents. And Pat, he's like, he gives you no space. He lands no strikes. What's he landing? 1.87 strikes per minute. So low. He doesn't have to land strikes. He's constantly on you. He'll take your back. He's in half control. He moves to mount. He'll take your back again. All over you, right? Taking down Jonathan Pierce is no easy task. Out-grappling Jonathan Pierce is no easy task. He made it look real easy. And then against Joannison Brito, who's a murderous power puncher, he hits you once you're going away. He didn't play zero punchy kicky with him. I think he's learned from the Diego Lopez fight and the Damon Jackson fight. I want to say that he's learned from those mistakes. And then if he goes out there against Chepe and just grinds him up against the cage, takes him down, puts him in bad spots, I think he's capable of winning this fight. So I really don't like it. I'm a Chepe fan. Chepe by knockout, if you get a good price on it, 100% on the table. And I actually got Pat Sabatini to win this thing by decision.
What is Chepe by knockout? Just out of interest before we move on to the next fight.
Just because he's not done it lately, I feel like you could get a good price on it.
+370-ish.
That's one of those guys you can knock out.
Don't hate it.
What was it? +3?
Yeah, +370.
+370. I mean, what's first round?
It's very much in play of how he does it. First round. It's too early in the week.
Too early. But keep an eye. Maybe you could get something real good on that if you can get 370 on knockout in general.
Chepe round one. +5. Books are sharper. Books are sharper these days to these types of things, man. Because what I hate about that round one prop is like, what if he gets the takedown in round one, holds him down the entire time, and then right at the beginning of round two, that's when Chepe absolutely lights him up and knocks him out. Like, that's definitely in play too. So I don't know. It's too early in the week for like the round one KO. At least at like the majority of books. Wouldn't have that posted. All right, we got Angela Hill taking out Fatima Klein. Klein, a -500 favorite to come back on Hill, +375. Do you trust Angela Hill to get a wrestling game going here and upsetting the prospect or nah?
At 40-plus years of age? I am one sick individual, and I truly do believe in the CF dot model. And if I had not seen Tisha Torres last week, this seems like the kind of spot I could be talking myself into with Angela Hill. But the realistic nature is Father Time is undefeated. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Mother Time is undefeated. These girls are slowing down physically. The output weans off drastically. The reaction time isn't quite there. And Tisha very much has never fought like that ever. She refused to throw anything more than a singular strike. Side kick, jab, right hand. If she did throw a two, which she only threw two, I think two or three, two punch combinations, would be the jab and then the right hand. No threes, no fours, no coming forward, no punches and bunches. No, you lost the last round. You need to make adjustments. You start to just go through the motions. You're such a savvy veteran. And in Tisha's case, she's never been finished in her entire career. So you're such a savvy veteran that you understand not getting hurt. And then as such, you start fighting these fights to not get hurt. You're a step behind. And the opponents keep getting bigger, and they're faster, and they're stronger, and you don't want to engage quite as much, and the takedowns aren't as easy. And Angie, she never gets tired. She's got cardio for days. And now you're seeing her slow down in these third rounds drastically. Yeah, it's not for me. Klein, although it seems like it's a winnable fight for Angie if you got the best version of her, Klein's another one of these. At 115, this is definitely her proper weight class, and she's got skills everywhere. High-level BJJ black belt. If she can get on top of Angela Hill, it's going to be a problem. If Angela Hill gets on top of her, I really don't think she's in any trouble, other than if I just accept position and let time tick off the clock. More than that, due to COVID trying to take her down, she just gets back up. When she gets back up, she's nasty with her knees inside the clinch, elbows inside the clinch. She's faster than Angela Hill. You mentioned about, can Hill take her down? She's been spending the entire camp with Erin Blanchfield getting ready, so feel like her grappling game is going to be on point. The Melissa Martinez fight, I will admit, she went 0-for-2 on takedowns over Melissa Martinez. So I don't feel great about her taking down Angela Hill as an easy path of victory, but she could take down Angela Hill. I think she could also just outstrike her. Most of it won't be at distance. It'll be inside the clinch. But at distance, she's faster. And I feel like if her output's there, she doesn't start to slow. Women's 115, the cardio usually does check out. And Klein's a good competitor. I think that that won't be a hole in her game that's going to be there to get exploited by a 41-year-old Angela Hill. So I get it. It's women's MMA. But I took the CF dot model on both dogs last week, both women's MMA fights, and both favorites won. Sometimes you just got to go with what the logical pick is. Bigger, faster, stronger is probably the logical pick, and I get it. She's a big favorite, but Fatima Klein probably finds a way to get her hand raised in this one, so that's the play for me.
Yeah, as a former CF dot merchant, I've been doing a lot less CF dot recently and been taking some of these favorites, and it's been working out okay, to be perfectly honest. So
women's favorites have been hitting 68% of the time on the year, right?
So it's like they almost get undervalued because they know that like people are just gonna bet the dog. Cause like idiots like me used to always pound the underdog every single time. But like now it's just like they're getting a little bit shorter because there is like some like two-way price action happening in a lot of these spots. It's Klein for me as well. Younger, faster, stronger, probably at this stage in her career. Definitely has a lot to look forward to at the top and frankly, it's not a step, you know, you can say like, oh, well, it's a big step up in competition. Well, it is from her last two fights, but coming in against Double J, up a weight class on short notice.
Double J versus Hill, she would jazz me with Smoker.
Well, exactly. What I'm saying is that like, it's a step up in competition from her last two wins, but like she did okay in that fight, really tough spot, short notice, up a weight class. So, I can't back Hill at this point. I'm off the Hill train. Because I got other terrible decisions to make, which I've already made. And that's fading, this new Russian hype prospect. Bison Gersu Surkayev, -950, taking on Eric McConico. I think I have some at +575, and I touched some +700 this morning on Eric McConico. And do I expect him to win the fight? No, I don't. But I do think that, like...
Nice donation.
It could be. It very likely is. But, I mean, here's the thing, and this is where me and you always disagree so much on it. Just, like, these -1,000 freaking favorites, like, they don't really do all that much for you. You know, you look at like, you know, not trying to like, but like on regional scene, sometimes it's like a lot of these -1,000, they, for what they add to you, the risk that you end up taking on is way too much. Now, is McConico the ideal type of opponent that I want to fade Suzukayev with? No, not really. But like this Taha guy is absolutely brutal. That was a layup fight for him. Going to the decision, like that fight against Shane Sobnoski, like showed a little bit of like issues in his game. Eric Nolan came in on like 3 days' notice, fighting up a weight class, and like one round one against Basengir Susukayev. I don't know if this guy's cardio is all that great. He's dangerous, and he's a good looking Russian prospect who I believe speaks English quite well. Like there's reason for them to, you know, try to build this guy up, and I expect him to totally win. Do I expect him to win 9 out of 10 times against McConico? No. It may be more like 80-20, and that's why I took the +700. So, expecting to lose, hoping to win. I'm sure he'll be, you know, Bisinger is top ticket for Cody this week.
Well, no, he's not top ticket because he's minus 950. So, like, you would have to make it a three-guy top ticket because otherwise he's quite literally adding nothing at all. But then, yeah, he's probably going to end up on the second line. I get wanting to fade a guy because he doesn't look that good. And, you know, yeah, Taha's not great. And Eric Nolan is short notice and this and that and this and that. Yeah, I don't love this guy. That's fair. But you still got to like the guy you're betting, not just I'm fading him strictly based on a number. And for Eric McConico, I don't really see how he wins this fight. And you know me, I'm a McConico guy, right? I backed this guy in the regionals. He'd fight for Tough Enough. Thing is that the first round against Mackie Bitolo, he don't look good. It's just Mackie eventually tires out. Tyler Ray beats him in the first round. Then eventually Tyler Ray fades off. He's not a first-round knockout kind of guy. He's not a first-round submission kind of guy. Although he has defeated very low-level competition in the first round, he's more of a wait for you to tire. And then since he's come to the UFC, he's shown absolutely no redeemable qualities at all. He's 35 years old. He probably shouldn't be in the UFC to begin with. And yet, against Ruzaboev, the first round, well, the whole fight, he landed 5 significant strikes. This fight didn't hit the ground. McConico just stood there and stared at him the entire time. Nah, I'll give him a pass. Ruzaboev's 6'5". He's very long.
Short notice.
Short notice. It's not exactly the ideal matchup, but Ruzaboev has fought as low as 170. He's 6'5". Big guy. McConico just didn't do anything. He's like a deer in the headlights. He just stood and stared and stared and stared, and then the second round he gets hit, he goes down, fight's over. The fight against Cody Brundage, I back him. Why? Cody Brundage is the biggest bum in the division. And yet, I don't know how we got the decision, Paul. I was glad to take it. What's up? What's up? But Cody Brundage kicked his ass, man. He took him down 3 times and actually outpaced him. McConico, who's standing there, and yeah, he can knock out Brundage. Anybody can knock out Brundage. Just put some hands on him. He stares at him. He just does not want to do anything. Sirsakayev has a path of victory with his wrestling, where he can just go take McConico down and dominate him on the ground. Or he could stand with him. And McConico's not pressing the action. He's not coming forward. His durability is not great. He's been finished in a pile of fights, been knocked out 4 times in his career. His grappling is not that great. Sirsakayev can beat him on the ground. He can beat him on the feet. The only one way Sirsakayev blows this thing is if he goes 15 minutes and gasses. But, you know, you referenced that Shane Sobnoski fight. Shane is durable. He's got a decision with a whole lot of guys. And yeah, he went to decision there. He's buddied with Khamzat Chimaev. He won on the contender series against Taha. And then 4 days later, fought Eric Nolan. That's back-to-back weight cuts. That's, you know, I had a training camp. I peaked. Now I'm fighting some random guy who I know nothing about, who I'm not training for because I just fought and I don't have time to train. Now I make weight again. Now I fight this guy. He takes the first round off. Didn't look good. Got stung standing. Eric Nolan brought it to him. Eric Nolan's a CFFC champ. He's not a bum. Mm-hmm. And then the second round, the kid made the adjustments. He got the easy takedown and then subbed him. So he's young. He's getting better. He's not taking this fight on 3 days' notice. He's not had to cut the weight a whole bunch. He buys with Chimaev. I think McConico is the perfect opponent for him to absolutely steamroll and look good in the process. The question isn't money line minus 950. It's do I take the under 1.5? Because Sirsakayev inside the distance is no-brainer. Sirsakayev by decision or by a submission, most likely, but can he get it done in 1.5 rounds? I think so, but I'm not like the most confident. McConico's not a wet paper bag. He's got a pulse. I like him. It's just he's not on this level at all, and they've given him an uber prospect, and he can't say no. He's 0-2 in the UFC, and he jumped in on short notice. You've got to be a company guy. They're saying go get whipped by Sirsakayev because we want to build him up. Well, that's the job you're here to do, and that's the job he will do. I get numbers, I get value, boys, and all he's got to do is hit 1 out of 10 times, but I don't think he hits 1 out of 10 times, so I got to go the other way. Not top line. What am I getting at a minus 950? But Sirsakayev by sub, under 1.5, Sirsakayev inside the distance, second line. I'm going to play him, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't play, especially in the UFC, I just don't play too many minus 1,000s. It's just regionals I will, certain fights, because it's just like you watch tape on these guys, and you're like, this guy was like, you know, looking for food stamps 20 minutes ago. Like, it's a different kind of game over there. But all of these guys get to the UFC for a certain reason. Like, it's pretty rare that I think that somebody's a 90% winner at the UFC level. So that's why I end up on those other sides. It doesn't pay off all that at often. Do you expect to lose? Yes. It's not for everybody, but for me, that's how I roll. Finally, we got Matheus Camilo taking on Vyacheslav Borshev. Camille minus 155 favorite to come back on Borshev plus 135. Can Camille wrestle Borshev here? Because you don't want to just stand in the pocket with Borshev. You know, Slava Claus, he will throw them hands. Camille obviously was having some success last time out. We backed Gabe Green against Camille. And, I mean, you know, round two, grappling kind of, you know, was looking a little bit rough there. Ends up getting rear naked choke, ended up getting, you know, reversed or whatever on the ground. Kind of learned a vet lesson there. I'm tempted to take Borshev in this fight. One, volume's usually pretty high for him. He gets taken down. He gets controlled. You know, Terrence McKinney got him out there in round one. Tom Nolan was kind of just able to edge him. I'm struggling to back this Camille kid at minus money. Where are you at with this fight?
I did actually go with Camille, and that, I don't like him, but yeah, he's only 24 years old, and I think I'm a little harsh on him. So part of that being that, first of all, this kid's submission grappling is legit, and he's got legit wins on the regional scene, and most notably, Jake Heffernan, and he subbed inside of one round. Dorian Ramos, he subbed with a triangle armbar in the third. He's got a win over Janoski Soho, which is not terrible, but I shit on him because this is this Dorshba Nabatov fight from Korean Zombies promotion over in Korea that got him into the UFC. Whereas yep. He only throws like jabs to the body. He'll throw a right hand over the top eventually, but it's jab to the body six times so that you think there's a jab to the body coming, and then he tries to split you over the top with the right. He's one and done with his striking. Super low volume. His wrestling's not good, but he's good with his trips. Presses you up against the cage, trips the lead leg out. And then once he gets on top of you, he does have really nice jiu-jitsu. He does. Nabatov is a close fight. Nabatov's taking him down, but he's getting back up. Nabatov gasses, and that allows him to take over and win the fight. But there's definite holes in this guy's game. He's full-time in Las Vegas. He's getting quality work down there. He's only 24 years old. He's got a really good submission game. It's just you got to start adding those other things to him. Against Gabe Green, when I rewatched that one, Gabe Green in that first round is not throwing any punches because I think he's worried about getting taken down. And then eventually, sure enough, outside trip against the cage. And he goes to work, dude. He actually catches Gabe Green a triangle choke at the end of the first round. Like, he throws up submission. He's on your back. He's looking for a rear naked choke. You scramble. He's looking for an armbar. He's looking for a rear naked. He's good with a Kimura as well. And then in the second round, at the first sign of adversity, he packed it in. But that second round actually starts with him getting Gabe Green down again and going to work. It's that as soon as Gabe Green hits a reversal on him, he just completely gets deflated. If Borishev was anything closer to a prime version of Slava Claus, yeah, he's got a good get-up game. And he'll keep making you work, and you're starting to get tired. And your one-and-done punch to the body is not going to work against him. He's going to thrash you. And I would, too, be taking Vlasislav Borishev. He looks broken to me, man. He looks absolutely broken. First of all, he's 2-6 in his last eight fights. The wins are James Lontop on a split decision and Maha Shot, who he's able to catch. The losses are almost always him getting taken down and now grappled. But it's the more recent ones. Like, his fight with Nazim Sadikov was a banger. Excellent fight. But against Chase Hooper, he got knocked down and then thoroughly out-grappled big time by a young kid who mostly just has jiu-jitsu. His fight with Tom Nolan, took him down and had three submission attempts on him. His fight with Terrence McKinney took him down 20 seconds into the fight and then guillotine choked him. I get he's only 34, but when you watch him fight, he takes a lot of damage. When he trains hard. He's had a lot of kickboxing. He just seems like he's lost a step, and he's always been open for those takedowns. If he's getting taken down and there's a good grappler on top of him, he's in trouble. And I think Camille's actually a pretty good grappler. So I'm just going to plug my nose here and take Matheus Camille and hope that he's made enough improvements to his game to make this thing look good. But, you know, I'm not sold on the kid at all. It's a good style clash that favors him. And I'm going to roll the dice on that.
All right. Hit him with the PRP codes.
Tons of underdogs this week, but not at the top. We're going to go with Islam Makhachev, Valentina Shevchenko. Michael Morales is going to be dog number one. We're taking Carlos Prates. We're taking Benil Dariush as dog number two. PRP pick Rodolfo Vieira. Oh, but that's dog number three. Gregory Rodriguez, I do like. We're going to take Aaron Blanchfield. We're going to take Cody Haddon as dog number four. We're going to go with Kyle Daukaus. We're taking Pat Sabatini, that one could blow up in my face. Fatima Klein, Basinger, Susser Gaev, and Matus Camillo. So, yeah, four underdogs in total. But, I mean, some of them, we're getting some really good prices, I believe. Of course, anybody that's over on the Discord side of things know that I'll put up the props and the over-unders as well. I felt like that was a good angle last week. We were able to hit a couple good ones. And, yeah, and that's what it's all about. If you can hit a plus 300 or a plus 400, I'm not, like, against that style of betting. And I understand Paul does this extremely effectively is if you have three bets and they're all at plus 400, well, there only needs to be one that hits and you're going to make money. When you're betting a parlay and it's a three-team parlay, all three guys got to win, man. And you're probably making as much money as the hitting the plus 400 one time. So I don't blame you. You can get a 10-1. This seems crazy. Oh, it's a split decision prop or it's a first round finish prop, but it's plus 800. And is it not possible that this would hit one of those eight times? 100%, man. I completely agree. It's just, I like full card parlays. I like putting parlays together. I like trying to see who's got the, you know, the most likelihood of winning. And I think that's why we balance each other out well. I'm going for parlays. I'm going for who's most likely to win this fight. Paul sniping these excellent totals, these excellent over-under props, these excellent, you know, method of
not
victory.
Not always
props.
Excellent.
And sometimes just a
sometimes
good...
Sometimes you look like a complete moron taking these sides, right? Like
That's...
But Susser Gaev could win in the first, yeah, like, minute and a half, and people in the Discord are going to be like, oh, how about that Mekaniko play? But it's just like, I made the bet knowing that, in all likelihood, I look like a moron.
If Benil Dariush loses or Cody Haddon loses, they're gonna lose in spectacular fashion, mm-hmm, where I am gonna look like an idiot. And similar to last week, Zachary Reese, okay? And everyone's like, yeah, man, good call. It's like, what good call? He's this close to getting knocked down in the first round himself.
Yeah, luckily it was stopped and he was able to recover a little bit.
Oh, the groin strike bailed him out. And groin strikes don't bail out anybody ever, other than this one-time Reese. And maybe Alex Pereira versus, what's his name? Goofy-ass Jamal Hill. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like a fight can... Many things can happen, man. Many things can happen. You get knocked down in the first round. No, you choke the guy out in the first round. This guy, Waldo Cortez Acosta, he gets TKO'd. No, it's an eye poke. You rerun it. He gets the first round knockout. So it's not as easy to say, oh, you're an idiot for taking this guy. This guy had an angle. That angle didn't play out. If you would have seen this thing simulated 100 times, that angle would have, just not on this day. So reasonable people, they get that. The unreasonable people show up in your DMs or your comment section being like, oh, I can't believe you missed that. That's fine, man. It's not for everybody, but the people that watch this show and have supported the show for a long time, and even new viewers, it's like you're a hardcore. Nobody finds the show unless you're a hardcore fight fan who knows what you're looking at. And at that point, you understand it's MMA, baby. Anybody can win at any time. No knockout wins. Never knocked out a guy before. Fighting a guy who's never been knocked out doesn't matter. He bobs when he should have weaved, dipped his head, and he took a knee in the face. Things happen, right? So anyways, that's a PRP for me. And I'll let my boy Paul Shaughnessy give it the old wrap up.
We are just about out of time. But before we go, I wanted to give a quick shout out to What's Up Ryan from the Bookie Beatdown Discord, named the King of Poop, poop emoji by some of his contemporaries and haters. Ryan hit the top three lines of his NFL PRP this past week. He also followed up on Monday night with an 11-1 same game parlay. I don't know if NBA went all that well from last night, but that's besides the point. You know, bunch of haters, some of his contemporaries and haters out there. Eat some crow with those oranges, pal. All right. But that's it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed this show. For Cody, I'm Paul, saying goodbye and good luck.